Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. There are two kinds of Holocaust survivors. Those who didn't die, yet could no longer experience pleasure, and those who yearned to feel alive and were able to create life anew. In this edition of Radio Curious, we visit with Maya Finkel-Schwartz, born in France in 1932, to Jewish parents from Poland. After being separated from her father at the beginning of World War II, her mother had the foresight to introduce then 7-year-old Maya to as many social workers and nuns as her mother could locate. It was these people who Maya credits with saving her life as they sheltered her in barns and convents. Maya never saw her parents after the war. As an older teenager, she arrived in Los Angeles, California, where she still lives, after a decades-long career teaching high school math, and later as a singer, as we shall hear. The story of Maya Finkel-Schwartz is one of 52 childhood accounts of the horrors perpetrated by Nazi Germany, documented in the book How We Survived, 52 personal stories of child survivors of the Holocaust. More information about this book is available at childsurvivorsla.org. Maya Finkel-Schwartz visited the studios of Radio Curious on April 20th, 2012. Maya shared her story and a song accompanied by her son, Michael Charnas. Her theme is the joy of life, which is where we began our conversation.
La joie de vivre. La joie de vivre est le bien-être physique et moral. It means physical and emotional well-being.
How did you come to achieve the joie de vivre?
Well, I think my parents had it. I grew up in an atmosphere with their friends where there was lots of it. Financially, we were modest, humble folks, but plenty of joie de vivre. It was all over. In the picnics, in the parks, in the friends, playing, going to school, it was all over. Busting all over.
What was your childhood like?
Well, part one was a happy childhood, and part two, it was destroyed because of the war. You know, I have been miraculously kept alive, but when the war came about, my childhood drastically changed my whole way of life, from joy to endless tears and sorrow and fear.
You and your family are Jewish.
Yes.
What was the form or the level to which you practiced being Jewish as a child before the war came?
Well, my parents were not religious. I have an uncle in Israel who's very religious, and he told me there were rabbis in our family. But my mother married a little bit the character who goes to Siberia in Fiddler on the Roof, who preaches on the left side. And for equal rights, for greater humanity, and all that. And so it was a strong left-wing movement with Léon Blum and social reform in France. And I grew up in that atmosphere.
And you were born in 1932 in Paris.
Yes.
So right now you're sharing with us the first 7 or so years of your life.
Yes.
Until the war came.
Right.
When the Nazis invaded France.
Right.
What happened in your life at that point?
Well, one day my parents received a note from the police, la préfecture de police, and it says, all the men are to come tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. to register as Jews. And a lot of friends were in our apartment. I heard everything. I saw the debate. Some decided they would show up, and some decided they would hide and run and not register. And so my father decided to obey the law, register. And He went to the police station never to return again. And he was then taken with other friends to a camp in France called Bonne-la-Rolande in the center of France. And he remained there. And my mother and I visited him once, and it was a tear surrounded by barbed wire, and it was terrible. I remember it just full of fear and full of danger.
Do you remember why you and your mother were allowed to leave the concentration camp when you went to visit your father?
At the time, they just arrested men. And the Nazis and their collaborators knew what they were doing, because by arresting the men, the rest of the family became unprotected. And so 1 year later, in 1942, they arrested women and children and whatever men they could find. And this way, also, I need to mention, I heard that from Claude Lancement, who made the movie about the Shoah, and he said in the past, the Inquisition or others might tell Jews, get out, you have no right to live amongst us. But with the Shoah, it became, you have no right to live.
Your mother helped save your life.
Yes.
And a number of different social workers helped save your life.
Yes.
Can you tell us how that occurred?
When my father was taken away, my mother was working night and day, cleaning people's house, sewing, and ironing, and I saw little of her. And in between, she would, whenever she had a little time, she dragged me from one social worker to the other, one office to the other, all over Paris. I cried a lot. And one day she came home early, and I said, Mama, you're home early. And she said, the lady I work for said, don't work for me today. Go home, find a place to hide, you and your daughter. There are rumors that the collaborators, the police, will come tomorrow and arrest women and children. And so we looked for a place to hide. There was none, although our neighbors were very kind. My mother decided we should hide in the closet and not to breathe, not to say a peep. And sure enough, they came at 6 a.m. in the morning, knocked at the door, and we held our breath and they went away. And from then on, we had to try to find different places where to hide. And it was a nightmare, because when you looked outside, the streets were full of Gestapo and French police. And inside, they could just barge in and liquidate you.
How old were you at that time?
When my father was arrested, I was 9. And when my mother was arrested, I was 10. I was 7 when the war began. And I was 13 when the war ended.
How was it that you were saved?
I was saved because my mother hid me in the closet first thing. So that was a great thing. Some people were found out right away. The second thing, all the social workers and people in the Red Cross that she put me in touch with, they all looked after me. So I was very lucky. And two convents, I owe my life particularly to two convents. One was Notre Dame of Zion, and the other, the Good Shepherd.
Can you tell us about the nuns who saved you and to whom you owe your life?
I just need to mention that after seeing the movie Schindler's List, I said to myself, I was on somebody's list. Whose list was I on? That someone who looked after me saved my life. And also I saw the movie A Winter's Tale by Shakespeare. And in that movie, people we thought dead come back to haunt us. They really weren't dead, or they haunt us in our dream. And at this point, I got a letter from a friend who was in the same Jewish orphanage. She saw my name on the bulletin, and it just said 150 Jewish children. It just says, if anyone recognizes your name, please contact me. So I contacted her right away, and she had left the convent, became a nun, left the convent, got married, had a son, daughter, and she invited me to spend a week in her country home near Grenoble. And that's where I was hidden, near Grenoble.
But when she invited you to spend that week?
50 years later, it was absolutely a wonderful experience. And I asked her, I said, how did you survive? She says, I have one attitude in life. The Lord has always been with me. He will always be, and I need not fear. And she was on the wanted list by the Gestapo. She saved the lives of 650 Jewish children and thousands of refugees. And there were nuns. I picked up a little bit of conversation. Nuns, priests, and other people that were denounced and executed by the collaborators and the police and the Nazis.
So you found this woman who saved you.
So I'm on her list. I'm on the list of Denise Paulin Aguadish, and her name is at the Museum of the Holocaust in Washington, D.C.
And this occurred about 20 or so years ago.
Yes, at the time of the movie Schindler's List.
What happened to you after World War II?
Well, I need to mention, we were three Jewish girls staying at the convent of the Good Shepherd, and the nuns and the newspaper would refer to Americans and allies dropping their bombs all over us as the terrorists. So we stayed in the convent a few years, and the nuns said, there are rumors that the terrorists are coming in tomorrow. And the social workers came, asked us to pack our bags. It was dangerous. There was the headquarters of the French Resistance, the headquarters of the Gestapo, and the bombs dropping over. People were dying all the time. And so I said, the terrorists are coming tomorrow. And the social worker said, the nuns are nice people. They don't know what they're talking about. So we slept in the other convent, Notre Dame of Zion. We heard all kinds of noise that night. We woke up in the morning. The Americans and the allies were in the street. And it was the happiest day in my life. It overnight, the nuns knew what it was all about.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Maya Schwartz in our studios on April 20th, 2012. Maya Schwartz is a child survivor of the Holocaust in Europe. She now lives in Los Angeles. She had an extensive career as a teacher for about 28 years, teaching French and Spanish in Los Angeles.
And I also taught one-year continuation schools.
And you're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Tell us about how it is that you came to the United States.
Well, it's in those days we didn't have a phone. And so I went back home, got in touch with some of the neighbors. And by that time I was 13, 14. And I left the address of the orphanage where I was staying outside of Paris. I was hoping for my parents to come back, and they never did come back. So one day we got a note from the post office saying, come at 6 p.m. Somebody wants to talk to you on the phone. And so I came with a counselor from the home at the post office, and I got a phone call from an American. And this gentleman, his name was Charles Lederman, and he was the brother of my aunt's husband living in Los Angeles. And he had come to Europe, the whole family, the Lederman brother, 20 brothers, sisters. Some had perished in the Holocaust. He was looking for survivors. And my aunt, who was my mother's sister, asked him to look us up. So when he went to the home where I lived in Clichy, Port de Clichy, he found out the address and we communicated. And I met him and his brother Ben, and they made papers for me to come to America. So I came to America in 1947. I was 15 years old.
And where did you arrive?
I left Rouen. I came on a cargo boat. It took, I think it took 6 weeks to get here from Rouen to New Orleans.
And then where did you live?
I lived with my aunt and uncle, and it didn't work out. It didn't work out.
How old were you when
I was 15 years old.
And when it didn't work out?
Oh, there are a lot of stories that happened. I hope to write my memoir. There were a lot of things that a lot of people sometimes who don't empathize or understand some of the trauma people go through, there's no connection. And also they were poor. I had a vision of them as being well off because the two brothers who came to Europe, they were super wealthy. They were millionaires, but my aunt and uncle were struggling. They barely could make ends meet. So they had an extra mouth to feed. When I came in and I slept on the couch in the living room. So it didn't work out any way you look at it.
How did you get to Los Angeles?
I came straight from New Orleans. The social worker put me on the train from New Orleans to L.A., and people were waiting for me when I arrived in L.A. I couldn't speak a word of English.
That would have been in 1947. Who met you?
I think it was Charlie, the one who had made the paper. He met me, and he said something that really hurt me. He said, I've done your aunt a favor. I've brought you. Now I don't want to see you again. I don't want to have anything to do with you. So she lives her life. I live mine. Leave me alone. And that hurt me because I had the expectation of the generosity of America. And this is something I experienced deeply in the convents and in the Jewish orphanage, lots of affection between all of us, counselors, adults, children. And all of a sudden, here's an adult, very rational, very objective, I felt totally rejected and I didn't understand it. And I felt unprotected.
And so what did you do?
Well, I lived there for a year or so. I ran away and there are many, many things that happen. And a French social worker came to visit. And she was trying to find me a home, another home to stay in L.A. She traveled through the United States interviewing children who had come to America. And so I opened my heart to her. But in order to put me in another home, and she did find another home, she needed the consent of Charlie. And he wouldn't give his consent. My aunt started crying and all that. And so these were the words he said to me. I said, I'm not going back under any circumstance. And he said, if you don't go back, we'll have you deported. And when I heard the word deported, I thought he was going to send me to a death camp. At that age, I didn't know vocabulary. So I did go back. And then I got married. I was 18. I married the day after I graduated from high school, and that didn't work out either. But I got this wonderful gift. My son is a wonderful gift to me. And I need to mention my algebra teacher, Mr. Goldberg. He and his wife paid for singing lessons for me. And one lady brought a big box full of wonderful clothes for me to wear at that time. So a lot of wonderful people have been there for me.
So tell us about your joy of life that is brought to you by singing.
Well, I think we were always singing, and singing in school, and I remember most songs that we studied, and also we were singing the Jewish orphanage. We would get up on the chair, pretend that it was the stage, and sing. And I was in many, many choirs throughout my life, and right away connected with all the music teachers. And I'm still in a voice class with Bill Elliott, Santa Monica Emeritus Program. I gave a concert 6 years ago at age 74 of French songs. And Bill asked me, I worked with my companies for 2 years. It went well. So he made my dream come true.
Could you sing a song for us now?
Okay. I would like you to know my son, Mike, plays the guitar and sings with me.
And the song is called Night and Fog. It was written by Jean Ferrat, and it deals with the trauma of deportation. There were hundreds and thousands of human beings in those sealed wagons, naked, trembling, tearing into the night with their nails. And I am told that now it's not popular to talk about those things. It's better to sing songs of love. But who can stop me? I will sing those songs, even if I have to jazz them up, so that one day our children know who you are, who you were. You were hundreds and thousands in those sealed wagons. Nuit et brouillard, night and fog.
Would you like to stand up to sing? Night and Fog.
By Jean Ferrat.
Sung by Maya Schwartz and her son on the guitar, and also singing Michael Charnas.
Ils étaient vingt et cent, ils étaient des milliers, nus et maigres tremblants dans ces wagons plombés qui déchiraient la nuit de leurs ongles battants. Ils étaient des milliers, ils étaient vingt et cent. Ils se croyaient des hommes, n'étaient plus que des nombres. Depuis longtemps, leurs dés avaient été jetés. Dès que la main retombe, il ne reste qu'une ombre. Ils ne devaient jamais plus revoir un été. La fuite monotone et sans hâte du temps. Survivre encore un jour, une heure obstinément. Combien de tours de roue, d'arrêts et de départs qui n'en finissent pas de distiller l'espoir. Ils s'appelaient Jean-Pierre, Natacha ou Samuel. Certains priaient Jésus, Jéhovah ou Vishnu. D'autres ne priaient pas, mais qu'importe le ciel. Ils voulaient simplement ne plus vivre à genoux. La fuite monotone et sans hâte du temps. Survivre encore un jour, une heure obstinément. Combien de tours de roue, d'arrêts et de départs qui n'en finissent pas de distiller l'espoir. Les Allemands guettaient du haut des miradors. La lune se taisait comme vous vous taisiez en regardant au loin. En regardant dehors, votre chair était tendre à leurs chiens policiers. On me dit à présent que ces mots n'ont plus de cours, qu'il vaut mieux ne chanter que des chansons d'amour, que le ciel sèche vite. Oh, I goofed up on that verse. On me dit qu'à présent que ces mots n'ont plus de cours, qu'il vaut mieux ne chanter que des chansons d'amour, que le sang sèche vite en entrant dans l'histoire et qu'il ne sert à rien de prendre une guitare. Mais qui donc est de taille à pouvoir m'arrêter? L'ombre s'est faite humaine, aujourd'hui c'est l'été. Je twisterai les mots s'il fallait les twister pour qu'un jour nos enfants sachent qui vous étiez. Vous étiez vingt et cent, vous étiez des milliers, nus et maigres tremblants dans ces wagons plombés qui déchiraient leur nuit de leurs ongles battants. Vous étiez des milliers, vous étiez vingt et cent. What is special about this song? It mentions that the victims of the Holocaust were Jews, Christians, and many other religious or non-religious groups.
Well, Maya Schwartz, I want to thank you very much for being with us here on Radio Curious. And before we close, if I can ask you a big question with maybe a short answer. And that is there one thing in your life that you remember, kind of a eureka or an aha moment that shaped your life?
Well, there are many, many moments. Basically, to be aware and grateful of the love of family and mankind that my parents gave me, joie de vivre, the awareness that wonderful people, those I knew, those I never saw, risked their lives to save my life. So I live my life with gratitude and sorrow in my heart.
And what would you like to do with the remainder of your one precious life?
Well, I would like to write my memoir, what happened after the war and how we survive, actually. I think every age, I'm 80 now, and I celebrated with Mike and Kate and Elizabeth and lots of wonderful people I know, and with you and the rabbi and so on, so that every age is something wonderful and special for all of us. And it's, life is a gift, is the gift, is the most precious and wonderful. So enjoy it and give it plenty love, plenty nurturing.
And finally, Maya Schwartz, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
Well, I'm very excited. We wrote a book called How We Survive from the Child Survivors of the Holocaust. And there are 52 chapters. So I am one in one of the chapters. Some people survived hiding, and some people survived the death camps. It's a marvelous book, and it's not horrible. It's not. So you can read it and appreciate. I read a little bit at a time. And I need to mention that most children didn't make it. 1.5 million children were murdered throughout Europe. So those of us who made it, we're very lucky.
And your book is dedicated to those children who didn't make it.
Yes.
Well, Maya Schwartz, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you.
The story of Maya Finkel Schwartz is found in the book she recommends. She wrote one of the 52 accounts of the horrors perpetrated by Nazi Germany documented in the book, How We Survived, 52 Personal Stories by Child Survivors of the Holocaust. More information about this book is available at childsurvivorsla.org. Maya Schwartz visited the studios of Radio Curious on April 20th, 2012. Over 400 Radio Curious programs may be found on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free as my gift to you. I hope you enjoy them. Our address is 280 North Oak Street, Ukiah, UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541, and email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.